Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to the Anavision Podcast. This is episode 290. I am Jero, joined by Amru.
What up?
And we have a special guest with us, D. How's it going?
What's up, guys?
So D is here to help us with a few topics in our discussion segment, in which we will be talking briefly about Link's Awakening. We'll be talking about Monster Hunter World, the Iceborne DLC, Borderlands 2, and the anime movie Promare that just recently played in theaters. But to get started with news, our first story is that Castlevania is getting a phone game called Grimoire of Souls. So it's a phone game. I mean, it's not the most exciting reveal for Castlevania.
Like, what kind of phone game is it, though? Like, will it actually have the exploration aspects, or... Are we talking just straight up gotcha?
I'd have to check a trailer. I'm going to play some audio over this, actually. Turn it down a little bit.
Looks like there's a multiplayer.
Okay, so they're showing some exploration stuff. Yeah, we got it both playing. Yeah, there's some action stuff in here. It looks like straight ahead Castlevania action game. Probably have to do a lot of swipe controls and stuff for movement.
I need someone to release like a decent phone attachment that just like is a controller around the phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
That would be so fantastic.
Yeah.
That reminds me of this Mega Man X game that just went into beta. It's a mobile game called Mega Man Cross Drive or X Drive. Mm-hmm. And it is going to be featuring Mega Man X characters from throughout the, you know, multiple games in the series. And it'll actually be a side scroller with like multiple playable characters and different weapons and stuff. And it actually looks pretty dope for, you know, a free to play mobile game.
Okay.
That's definitely going to have gotcha elements.
Yeah.
So,
is it going to be like a timer based thing, or is it going to be like you buy things to make your character stronger?
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay.
I mean, it could be loot, it could be characters. There's any number of ways they could go, but yeah, apparently it went into open beta, no, closed beta recently, and people were liking it, so.
Mm-hmm.
Or Mega Man.
Yep, it's cool. Final Fantasy VII, when that game comes out in March of next year, they are, in addition to the modern combat system that they're bringing into the remake, they're going to add in a classic turn-based battle mode. So for people that prefer that over the new style of combat, that is available to you in-game.
So did you guys see how this plays out? So it's basically an autopilot mode. And like the basic premise of like the normal mode is that it's not necessarily an action game, but you have full control of your character. So, you know, you can move around, you can attack, you can dodge, you can block. And what you're doing is that your actions fill up your ATB gauge, which it fills up on its own, but it goes up faster if you're actually dealing damage. So once it's full, you can actually access a menu and then go in and select, you know, more powerful attacks or magic or items, and they use up your gauge once you've actually activated them. And what's kind of cool is that when you open the menu, the game kind of pauses, like, so it like slows down time so that you can actually make your selections and stuff. Now, the idea behind the turn-based mode is that once you enter a battle situation, you don't control the characters. So they'll move on their own, they'll attack on their own, they'll block, they'll dodge. So basically what you're doing is you're just waiting for that gauge to fill up before you select their attacks and stuff. So it basically is like a facsimile of what the ATB was in the original game.
Okay.
But it's the same battle system. You just don't control the characters in a moment-to-moment basis.
All right, that makes sense, because then you still get the visual element of the new battle system, but you're not pressured to move around.
Exactly.
It kind of makes it easier.
Yeah, and I mean, what's cool about it is that it's considered its own difficulty mode, and you can just change on the fly in the menu whenever you want.
Yeah. And on that subject, Death Stranding, Hideo Kojima talked about a I forget the exact name of the mode, but the idea is that if you're just like a movie fan and you just want to see everything in Death Stranding play out like a movie, you could select this difficulty.
It's actually cool.
Mm-hmm. Rockstar is also got its own game launcher app now on computer. So there's Epic and Steam and who knows who else is going to come out with a game launcher at this point. But GTA San Andreas is free. If you download a game launcher, you can get that, I assume, either for a limited time or maybe it's permanent. So yeah, another game launcher. GameStop is closing up to 200 underperforming stores. So we've talked plenty about GameStop in the past. I mentioned on a past episode with Steve that I can think of at least three GameStops down the main street that I live on, and I think one or two of those should definitely close. So yeah.
I honestly can't recall the last time I had to go into a GameStop. At this point, most of my pre-orders are either Amazon or direct from the company. Yeah. I got my my Borderlands loot box from the 2K game store online.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, at this point for me, it's either Amazon or Best Buy because they both have same-day delivery. And for a while there, GameStop and Amazon were doing the 20% off of physical copies, which that's lost now. So at this point, I'm transitioning more toward just buying digital, especially on the Switch.
My only concern with digital, and it's always kind of scared me, is if you lose like account privileges, do you actually lose access to games you've purchased?
Yeah.
That kind of scares me. I feel like my disc, unless it's something that requires like an active online connection at all times, I feel like my disc will always work unless I lose it. But yeah. I don't like the idea of being able to just lose access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next up, KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, is releasing a Colonel Sanders dating sim on Steam. We are recording this on September 22nd. It'll be available Tuesday the 24th.
That's just a sentence I never thought I would hear in my life. Colonel Sanders dating sim.
Yep, so you can romance the Colonel and get that secret recipe, you know?
You know, if we're talking about, like, in Japan, they eat KFC on Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And that's, like, it, like, you know, like, Christmas chicken is a thing in Japan.
Right, yeah.
And they do have KFCs, and Christmas is also considered, like, a romantic holiday. So I can just see the climax of the story being during Christmas Eve.
Oh, yeah.
You get to spend Christmas with the Colonel
and his
11 spices herbs.
Yeah. And it'll be free. So there's really no excuse for us to not review it the next time we do a podcast.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, man.
And then a couple anime stories. Project Sakura Wars. Did anybody watch that movie by chance?
No, Wars. But I did play some of the games.
Okay. So it's going to be getting a TV anime in 2020. Don't see any specifics yet on when, other than just next year.
It looks like it. I think it's going to be based on the new game that's coming out. And have you guys seen any of it?
I haven't.
No.
The big... Well, you know, it's like the first new Soccer Wars game in a while, I think. If you're not familiar with the series, it's basically it's a super weird combination. It's like a theater troupe that fights like demons in steampunk robots. And it's a tactical game. But the new game has character designs by old Kubo himself, who did the manga for Bleach.
Yeah.
And you can definitely tell if you look at those characters. You got black-haired Ichigo, and the main girl is she looks like Orihime. it's kind of exciting to be getting that new game. It's one of, I think, Sega's classic series. So,
all right. and an oldie but a goodie segment, Law of the Week. So the big Area 51 raid, there is, I guess, this weekend was the date that it was set to happen. And the funniest part of it was on Friday, I believe, there was a news channel that was doing a story, and behind the reporter, this guy does a Naruto run past the camera, and it caught the caught everybody's attention that week.
Of course, a weeb would do that.
Yeah.
What was hilarious to me was that, like, it became a viral kind of sensation. Like, you know, people were sharing that video and stuff. So the news organization that, like, did the original video clip had to go back and reach out to the guy and be like, give him an interview. Yeah. And so you hear him talking, and he just has, like, the biggest lisp, and you're like, I don't know what I was expecting, but I don't know what I should have expected. But I shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I can't believe that we're living in a time where we're seeing people Naruto run past Area 51.
Oh, yeah,
like,
check.
And people recognize that it's happening. Like, it's mind-boggling.
Check out this edit that I just shared on Discord. That's so good.
Oh, that's great radio. No, nobody
yeah,
can see.
Yeah, I'm gonna link it in the podcast notes. But it's they took the guy running, and after he runs behind him, a swarm of other clones come out from behind this guy's back on camera.
My favorite comment from that video was someone saying it's the first time that guy's parents' basement was empty in years.
Oh, that was fun. Apparently, I guess nothing really bad happened from the raid overall.
I think at least one person got arrested.
All right.
There were two. I don't know if there were any more than that, at least according to CNN last time I checked.
All right.
What's hilarious about this, and this is, like, tangentially related, right? This comes at around the same time that the military confirmed that some videos that came out in 2017 of UFOs are real.
Mm. Oh yeah.
And D, you'll find this hilarious. The guy who released those videos was Andrew DeLong from Blink-182.
That guy has been supporting his alien theories since, like, 1999. Like, he's a passionate, like, alien, like, he's a legit. It's kind of crazy.
He was actually validated. Now I'm laughing at this.
Yeah, I shared another one. I'm gonna include this in the show notes, guys.
that's fucking hilarious.
I just like just imagine meetings at the Pentagon where someone's telling a general what a Naruto run is. Like, having to explain or, like, mimic it in front of him in, like, a serious meeting. I would love to have been a fly on that wall.
Sir, it says here that they're going to Naruto run. what exactly does that mean? It's like it's a phrase that weebs used. To where they run with their arms behind their backs like idiots. Yeah. And they're like, sir, can you elaborate on what a weeb is?
Yeah. I like that there's also a wiki how-to on Naruto running, and it gives you the steps of, like, wear comfortable clothing, put your arms behind you. It's like a legitimate guide.
Naruto run to bust out the aliens.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to play some intermission music. I've been lazy with the editing recently, but I'm going to do better this time. So we are going to play some intermission music. When we come back, we'll be talking some video games and anime. We'll be right back. And welcome back to our discussion segment. We will get started off. I'll briefly talk about Link's Awakening that came out this Friday for the Switch. And it's a fun game. It's Legend of Zelda, pretty straightforward. It's not a super big game. I've been playing it for a good bit this weekend, and I am almost done. Just a couple things to talk about. First is that the combat is generally easy. So if you have played Zelda games in the past and you want a little bit tougher of an experience and something that makes the game last a little longer, I would recommend Hero Mode over Normal Mode. Second is that there are some performance issues as you're moving around the map and you're moving around the dungeon. It's not a super big map. Like, you can cover most of it in the early game, and it's eventually just about getting the right tools to get to specific areas that you need. But there are some frame rate dips that happen as you move in from one area to the next, and it happens in the open world and happens in dungeons, and it's something that I hope over the course of time Nintendo does fix, because it's kind of bothersome. It doesn't really, like, I haven't felt like I've died to a boss because of it, because it kind of, like, takes a moment to load in, so it happens. You see it a lot when you move through the map. And the third one is that while I have not experimented with the dungeon creation, I feel like around the internet I've heard, read nothing but disappointment in the idea of it. There's not really a whole lot to do, not as much as it could have been, and I almost feel like, you know, just the idea of a game like Mario Maker just kind of poo-poos what, like, a weak idea the dungeon creation seems to be in Link's Awakening. But it's a pretty good game, and I'm hoping to finish it soon.
So my question is, because this is a remake of a Game Boy game, does it feel like an old game?
No, it feels like a modern game. It kind of feels like it feels a little more like Link to the Past in a way, I would say, from the gameplay and the visual design. They do add some different things, in which there are a number of 2D segments. And the funny thing is that you go into these 2D and you're seeing Goombas and Piranha Plants. So, like, there's Mario infused into the game. But it kind of feels modern enough.
I do want to point out that you just said it didn't feel like an old game, but then you compared it to Link to the Past, which is about 20 years old.
That's true. Yeah, but I mean, you know.
I know. It feels like it still holds up.
Yeah, yeah. I think the regular would too.
I do want to play it because I missed out on the Game Boy and Game Boy Color versions. But it's like $60, man. That's so expensive.
Yeah, and I could see for people, because I'm playing on normal mode right now, and I plan to at least 100% it and then play heroic mode. But it's not a super long game, so I could definitely see why people would feel like, oh, you know, this, you know, 10-hour, 15-hour Zelda game, you know, in comparison to what we've gotten recently with Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. Say you got a hypothetical person who has a Switch and hasn't been buying enough games for it recently, and, you know, is thinking about going out and buying a Switch game. And they're interested in things like Astral Chain and the upcoming Daemon X Machina and Link's Awakening. Which one would you tell them to go by?
I would start with Astral Chain, and then Link's Awakening, and then Daemon X Machina. And I think, like, it depends on... Well, it doesn't really depend, but there's also the option of the Switch Lite, which just came out. So if you're committed to playing handheld only and don't really care about having the ability to dock, you can just get that, and it'll run fine enough there.
And that was my other question, I think, was for the frame rate issues. Is that something that you're having in handheld mode only, or is it also in docked mode?
In both. Yeah, gotcha. So on TV, yeah, you transition a lot, so you see it very frequently.
See.
Next up, D, you wanted to talk about the Monster Hunter World DLC, Iceborne.
I was really pleasantly surprised by this, and it's not a rare thing from Capcom. Usually with any Monster Hunter game, you get the initial release, and then you get the what's traditionally called G-Rank, but in this game is now called Master Rank version. And it's essentially mostly the same monsters with about 10 or 12 new ones. But they have new skills, new armor sets, higher damage, all that stuff. And so when I started Iceborne, I didn't really know what to expect because I kind of stayed away from the news. But if you played previous entries, a lot of your favorite monsters came back. And that was a really exciting feeling because you got to see them in world in a very, like, big, like, vivid, fantastic way. And the new monsters, I think, are actually one of the best parts of the game. They've got a couple of new Elder Dragons that legitimately feel like walking natural disasters. And it's kind of crazy because they've always been described this way, but I feel like the game never really pulled off making me feel like this thing could legitimately be considered like a disaster. But there's one monster that really just creates like waves, and then another one that freezes everything in like mass, like a massive radius, like things existing near it are frozen because it's just breathing in the area, which is kind of horrifying when you think about it. But overall, if you played World, I would definitely say give Iceborne a go. It is well worth. Yeah, it was $40, right?
I don't know.
I bought it without looking at the price. But it's well worth the money. And if you're, especially if you are someone who is accustomed or enjoys a little bit of a grind, this is a good game. Yeah.
So I know you've been playing some of the next game we're going to talk about, but would you say like Monster Hunter World is kind of like the main game that you play on a regular basis, or do you just beat it and wait for the DLC?
I kind of never stopped playing it, which is surprising because I think it came out, 2 years ago, roughly?
I think early last year, I would say.
So it was, I can't remember if it was 17 or 18. But, yeah, I've played it at least probably 20 hours a month, every month since then. I've got like 640 hours into this game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so yeah, I love it. And I'll probably be playing this until we get whatever is next for this series.
All right. Cool. And that next game that we're going to be talking about is Borderlands 3. So I have been looking forward to this for a long time. Had to deal with the Battleborn game. Do you remember that from Gearbox? That MOBA that was...
Yeah.
A disaster.
Yeah, it was so disappointing. And even though they're not really the same game, it came out the same time as Overwatch, and that was really bad for it.
Overwatch really just, like, I think Battleborn just felt incomplete compared to Overwatch.
It did.
And it felt very clunky by comparison.
Yeah. But let's talk about Borderlands 3. So I figure we kind of break out the discussion into different segments. So we'll start with story first. I think it's pretty good so far. I think the humor is fine. I know the humor is kind of a different strokes, different folks thing, where I feel like a lot of reviewers will be like, oh, it's toilet humor stuff. I think it's okay. I do like that characters that you're playing as interact in the storyline. Like, they actually talk. They have lines. It's not just a choice thing. It's not something default. Now, everybody still calls you Vault Hunter because they don't address you specifically. But I like that the characters talk, and I like that in multiplayer, they kind of split off, like, time for which character gets to talk. So I think it's kind of interesting to, like, hear other people instead of you're always just hearing yourself. And I'm not quite finished with the game yet, but one thing that I am disappointed in with the story is, as a Tales from the Borderlands fan, I really like the idea of Reese and Vaughn being in the story, and those characters feel very separate in a way from Borderlands 3 to Tails. Like, they feel very different. They were close buddies in that Tails game, but they barely, I don't think they even acknowledge each other's existence in this game, and they feel very different. They had, like, some kind of their quirks, but I was a little disappointed in how they were included. And also that Fiona wasn't included at all, because one of the things that they toyed with in the Tails games was that she could become a vault hunter. So those are my thoughts on story. D?
The story so far has been good. And like you said, the humor, at least to me, it's hitting all the right notes. It's not... Well, you know what? It is heavy-handed, but it's Borderlands, and I wanted it to be heavy-handed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's not worse than I anticipated. I'm actually okay with Claptrap's new voice actor. It's not a very slight change, honestly. I think the voice goes through so many filters and all that that
yeah. It's
really hard to feel the differences. Mm-hmm. I was a bit worried about that because, I mean, he's essentially the mascot for Borderlands, honestly.
Right. But and yeah, there's a whole story involving the guy that did voice him and didn't come back, and some differences between him and Randy Pitchford.
Yeah. And Randy is...
He is certainly a guy.
Yeah. I mean, I just loved... I say loved in the most sarcastic way, because I did not love this. Him at, like, the announcements or at major events, and he just starts pulling out magic tricks on stage, and I'm just sitting here like, Borderlands, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It's like a half hour of magic, and I'm just lost. But circling back around, the story is great so far, and I was really, really happy about seeing the last wave of new Vault Hunters in this game, and they actually get a lot more personality. You get some time with Zero, and he's great. Maya's cool, and her new aesthetic is also really awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the longer hair. Looks pretty cool.
And honestly, I really love most of the characters they've added.
Yeah. How do you feel about Ava? She's the one that seems the most divisive.
Honestly, it's kind of just a hard meh, which is really rare in Borderlands 3, because usually I either really hate a character and I'm just like, please get off my screen.
Yeah.
Or I'm completely enamored with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Barely a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny how, like, I feel like Sirens are, in a way, like the Jedi of the Borderlands world, but they don't seem to have quite the mystique for how much power they have. It's kind of funny in the Borderlands universe like that.
Well, it seems like their knowledge of their existence is a little bit more limited, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That definitely plays a role. People are like, oh my god, like, person can teleport or blow things up. Like, it's people don't really understand why. And I think also vault hunters are so weird that you could probably mistake a siren for, like, a vault hunter.
Right. So let's talk about some of the characters that are in the game. I have been playing as Moze, the gunner who has a mech, and I have been working down her Demolition Woman tree and her Bottomless Mag trees, which are the blue and green ones. And I think she's been very fun. I've liked Iron Bear. It's a really fun mech to use. I kind of feel like they had to ask a little bit to the Titanfall devs, like, how does this kind of control and feel? Because it really does feel like me playing Titanfall when I get in Iron Bear and I shoot around and stuff. And there's some decent options for the equipment that you can put on Iron Bear. And I especially have been enjoying the Bottomless Mags tree that goes down, because it's basically like crit hits start regenning ammo, and there's going to be one that I'm going to unlock soon where most can sprint and shoot at the same time, and there's some really cool stuff up there. You have been playing Amara, if I'm correct. How are you liking her so far?
So ever since Borderlands 1 and playing Brick, I've missed being able to punch my way through the game.
Uh-huh.
Amara gives me that back in spades. Her skills are really visually impressive. I love the fact that one of her skills allows her arms to stay up around her for a while. And so you have to see it through someone else's screen, actually, to get the full effect. But it looks so good. The fact that she's specced into dealing heavy elemental damage really, really kind of drives you to make sure that you're actually using the right thing at the right time and you're attentive, because the bonuses you get are insane. You deal your elemental damage for longer. There's a higher transport proc. You can attach elements to your skills, and you can attach elements to your melee. And one of the coolest things is whatever have your current class skill, there's another skill that gives your weapon a percentage of that damage. So if you have a basic shotgun and a corrosive action skill, then your shotgun does like 40% damage is corrosive.
Mm.
So they've really went a long way to making the characters feel complete and highly thematic.
Yeah.
Because I think previously in the older games, the skill trees, I wouldn't say they felt random, but actually, yeah, I'll be honest. Sometimes they felt random.
Yeah.
But the characters are very well put together in this game. I played Flack for a while as well, and he was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I've played a solo run of him, and I'm looking forward to playing him next, and it kind of seems like he's like the monster DPS character.
Have you spent any time playing Zane? He's the one character really
just a little bit
with.
I started a new character with him, and I used the what I like about his trees is that it seems like he has a lot of utility in whether he has the clone or he has his shield or the drone that you can fly around. So there's a lot of different ways that you can go with him, and I've really liked the shield, not just from playing as him, but playing as a teammate with him, because it like real blocks damage, and I think it does double damage too or something like that, and increases outgoing damage. And it's also nice if you're playing as him, you can pick up your shield and move around, so it surrounds you like a dome. So that's pretty cool.
The trees, I think one of the biggest changes for people who coming from 2. And I guess one as well is that you now have ways to augment your skills, which is really great. Yeah. And some people have multiple class skills, which I don't think we've ever had before this point. But it really feels like there's not a best tree for a lot of these characters.
Right.
No one's saying what is the right way to build this character, because you can do whatever you want and it works out.
Mm-hmm. And, I do like with Iron Bear, you can equip either a machine gun, a rail gun, a rocket launcher, and then you have a variety of options with those. What's it like with Amara as far as augmentation?
So usually it's going to change the element. Sometimes it'll deal additional flash. One of the cool augmentations is she has a skill, her phase grasp, where she like puts a hand up out of the ground to like grasp an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a skill that basically makes it so she sends a wave of those fists like through a group of enemies, and it's like, oh my god, it looks so cool.
Nice.
I'm really like, I have a hard time getting over how much better this game looks, because like the skills really do feel like these big impactful moments.
Mm-hmm.
I think even more so than in the past.
Yeah, it looks really good on PS4. I guess you're playing on PS4 Pro too.
Yeah.
So I put performance. The menu navigation is still a little weak. It takes a while to load, a little too long to load.
I agree with that.
Yeah, Gearbox is aware, and I guess they're starting to work on a patch for that. The menus themselves are okay, but navigating through them can be a bit of a pain.
There were some odd changes, like small things. I know they changed the naturally assigned weapon buttons. And so it's weird you're no longer using all four directional buttons. You can change it to classic.
Yeah.
It just feels very strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, what is the... Oh, I think I use the D-pad now just for the alt-fire. Yeah. I don't think there's a ping system in the game too.
Yeah, which is really cool. Also, legendaries show up on the map, which I thought was
awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and are also a lost loot, but you have to upgrade the mailbox, and man, upgrading's expensive.
Another fun thing is the loyalty rewards, which I thought was a really cool addition to the game. That whenever you use a manufacturer's weapons for kill enough enemies, they'll send you a generally hilarious email.
Yeah.
Carnage that you've dealt out. And they'll give you usually a purple rarity gun sometimes, which is just really cool. It's a small thing, but it's something I really like.
Right. So let's talk about some of the weapons a little bit. I like that a lot of the guns have an alt fire mode, whether it's a sniper that has a shotgun attachment, or doll weapons that have the option between auto, burst fire, semi-automatic. That's pretty cool.
The Torg weapons are really cool. The sticky ammo.
Yeah, they had to nerf that a while ago.
Yeah, it was it's a little strong.
Yeah.
Okay. I think probably my favorite alt-fire is the Torg. It's really cool.
Yeah.
The guns in this game are so much more inventive.
Mm-hmm.
Not every assault rifle feels like the same weapon.
Right.
Unless it's, I feel like in previous games, legendaries were the different, and anything else felt kind of generic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In this game, you really feel the difference between manufacturers and some of the variations within their own guns.
Yeah. One thing I was disappointed with is Malawan weapons. Like in Borderlands 2, they're really good. For snipers and SMGs, as good as a weapon as you could find. But in Borderlands 3, they made the option to have them all have a charge-up time, which I don't think the damage return for the charge time is good enough.
That's fair. I will say that Malawan weapons really don't feel as I don't know. I feel like the other manufacturers feel like that's really what it amounts to.
Yeah.
Jacob's, I like the ricochet mechanic for crits, which is really fun, especially with flak.
Right.
I think it's really cool how unique the guns feel to the manufacturers. They really put a lot of work into it.
Yeah. And like with shotguns now, like Hyperion has like a little barrier that gives you like a little defense. I've noticed this with Jacobs mostly. I assume this may happen with other shotguns, is that they blow back enemies, which I think is really cool because shotguns in the past were decent, but not really that great. But with blowing back your enemies and knocking them down gives you more opportunities to deal damage on them, whether you wait for your shotgun to reload if you have a small magazine or if you just switch to something else.
Yeah, I think that was something that really took me by surprise. The first time I shot an enemy, flew a good 12 feet. I did not expect that. There's a weird kind of floatiness to the way the enemies move around when they're hit, which I'm really fine with. The game feels very different, and it's not bad, but it very much feels like a different game. And I think a part of it is like the new gun sounds and the fact that the fire guns feel realistic. I feel like there was an unnatural floatiness to Borderlands 2 and the guns. So these guns feel more realistic, even though they're high fantasy weapons. They feel more realistic,
right?
In how you actually use them.
Like,
I think they loaded something like 17.
17 bazillion?
No. 1,700 unique like sounds.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Which is, it's crazy. So they put a lot of work into making the guns feel unique. The weapon skins and the character skins are stellar in this game, too.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that you can work through like the VIP system to get some of these things so you don't have to spend money. I feel like Xbox has never really been big on pushing
Like a loot box system.
Yeah, there's no like loot box system or Yeah. It's always kind of been, if you want it, you got to grind for it, but it's there. Mm-hmm. And this game very much, I think, follows through on that. And it gives you a lot to do with your, which was a complaint most people had about, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you gotten any good legendary so far? One I want to talk about is the Lucian Call, which is a Vladov auto rifle. And it's pretty cool because the perk is that getting a critical shot refunds two rounds to the magazine. It's like a magazine size of, like, at least for me, it was over 60. So it does that, and it also ricochets the shots to other enemies. So it's like you have this ridiculous, like, orange light show going on when you're shooting at a boss or whatever, and there's just all these orange, like, lines going around the screen. And I could go through, like, whole maps without having to reload.
That's actually really awesome. I have not been lucky. My fiance has gotten all the legendaries that we've seen drop because we were using the individual loot system.
Mm-hmm.
She's gotten, like, three legendary boss drop. I get loot explosions of greens and blues.
Yeah. I'm
relying on the golden chest to keep my equipment kind of up to date.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the cool, I can't remember the boss's name. Do you remember the boss who had the riot shield that had, like, the LEDs on it, and he was in the purple of speakers?
Bright shield. Where what planet is this on?
It's on, I believe it's on Pandora. It's one of the early bosses.
Shoot, I can't remember.
But anyway. Yeah, well, so it's called the Killing. But so the boss is got, like, hook up to a system, and his room is basically a giant rave, and his gun shoots sound waves.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But they're like changing LEDs, and the bullets are slow. It's a lot of. Also, it produces music. I think it's one of the most amusing guns I've ever encountered.
Yeah. Mouthpiece, I think, was the boss's.
Yeah.
And the cool thing that I noticed, maybe this is something I haven't noticed that much in Borderlands games, but if you go back to those same spots, the bosses will appear back there, so you could kind of farm them if you want to. I noticed this with one of the bosses that I played, like, on Eden 6, and I was just going back there exploring the area, trying to complete the map and all that, and the boss was there, and I could kill them again and get loot drops.
Yeah, which is really nice. They had it in 2, but in 2 it was less rewarding because operating legendaries and purple was kind of atrocious. It was really bad. Like, there are people who played through up to level 70 and maybe saw one legendary world drop at most.
Yeah.
But with 3, they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But really not that rare, and it's great because you have all these unique games that took time and effort, or games, guns that took time and effort to put together, and people are actually getting them.
Yeah, and if I'm correct, I think there's over 100 legendaries.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a big list on Reddit that you can find that kind of shows where they drop at, whether it's in the world or a specific boss. So you could check that out.
Announced DLC. I didn't know if you wanted to bring that up. I'm pretty excited.
Oh yeah, they're talking about the Halloween event, the
Bloody Harvest.
Yeah.
And then there's also a Maliwan DLC. I can't remember what the name of it is, but those are the two things they have slated for future releases, and I really can't.
Oh yeah, you mentioned Maliwan. One thing I like about the story is the inclusion of the weapon manufacturers. In the story, because thinking back to 2, I was like, oh man, Maliwan's such an awesome gun manufacturer. They make cool guns, and then they're kind of like the bad guys in their part of the story.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because you really didn't, like, you kind of had a feel for the manufacturer through some of the previous DLCs, but the only one you really had intimate knowledge of was Hyperion.
Yeah.
And I guess kind of Atlas from Borderlands 1, but even then it was sized.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really cool to get a feel for that in these games. And also, like, through the loyalty system, you really get an idea for like what kind of company they are if you have any story, which is also pretty
cool. Yeah. Couple other things. Forgot to mention the Atlas manufacturer. I like their tracking system that a lot of their guns have, where you can just hit them with a tracker grenade or whatever, and then just shoot wherever, and it'll just go right to them, right to the enemies. Children of the Vault, I'm not too crazy about as a gun type, because it's more based on heat than magazine size.
How do you feel about the villain? Game, because they seem to really divide the fan base.
Yeah, I think they're appropriately frustrating to watch because they are like comically villainous, I guess is a weird way to put it. But I do like that there's a significant story point in the middle, and you'll just be going around the world afterwards, and they'll play the video from that moment, and you're just like, oh, I'm gonna get you, mother, you know.
I think they're pretty good villains.
Yeah.
I think you kind of never stop feeling Jack's shadow lingering over the series.
Yeah.
But I do think that these two are a step in the right direction, and they're great villains, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna lie, I miss Jack. I will never not miss Jack in my.
Yeah,
but I am glad that the series should move on.
Yeah, it's good to see that. Yeah, it can survive without him.
Yeah.
I like that sliding and mantling is in the game as movement options now. I think that's become more standard in modern FPS games. It's good to see Borderlands get with the times on that.
Honestly, moving has never felt as good as it does in this game. Like, your mobility is off the charts compared to jump higher, you run faster, and the sliding, being able to shoot while you slide is way more fun than I anticipated.
Yeah. So Borderlands is a pretty solid game, and it's very much what I've been looking forward to for the past few years, ever since pre-sequel last came out. That was in 2015, so
yeah.
I'm very satisfied with the release and looking forward to it getting better along the way. One thing that they've said about characters is that they are not planning to release new characters into gameplay. They're planning to focus on the four that are in-game, which is a difference from the Borderlands 2 and pre-sequel games. So,
yeah. I kind of have mixed feelings on that. I think when I first saw the four hunters they released, none of them really spoke to me immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Through their trees, I found things that I loved, and I kind of fell into Amara because her brawl tree is just so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there wasn't a character that I saw and I visually connected with instantly.
Right.
That was the case for like Borderlands. I saw like Salvador. Yeah, that's my character.
Yeah.
No question. But I will say that these characters are so well developed and skill trees are so deep that I can't imagine anyone having
even more
than these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the amount of work and development that went into these characters and trees helps me understand why they don't want, because they've actually, one, inserted these characters into the story, but two, again, they are, I mean, I think any one skill tree is higher skill set for a character in previous games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel the same way. I'm curious what they do exactly. If they just get like fourth trees or even a fifth tree, if it goes that far. Could probably help characters or trees that maybe like don't fit into the end game as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely always kind of a issue for the Borderlands games, is that so skills and weapons don't cut it in the end game, and so you lose a lot of build diversity.
Mm-hmm.
This game is really centered around maintaining that, especially because the numbers are way more real. I'm not shooting things for like hundreds of billions. I don't think it ever really escalates to that level. And so I think sort of more narrow means that if your guns are four or five levels behind, they're still functional.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Borderlands 2, the growth of enemies' health was exponential.
Right. Levels. All right. So that has been Borderlands 3. I'm sure I'll be talking a little bit about that in the future as the DLCs come out. Looking forward to seeing what Bloody Harvest is and all the season pass stuff. Next up, our last topic is a anime movie discussion on Promare, the movie from Studio Trigger.
I can finally talk now.
Oh, I forgot he was here.
I did. I've just been quietly building Gunpla in the background. So Promare is a movie that was actually announced a while back at the same time as SSSS Gridman and Darling in the Franxx by Studio Trigger. This it finally came out in Japan a little while ago. I can't remember if it was earlier this year or last year, but we finally got to see it stateside with a theatrical release. D and I, we went to see it subbed. There was a dubbed version, but I did not get a chance to see that because I'm not buying two tickets. but yeah, it's from Studio Trigger. It's directed by Hiroyuki Imaishi, which you've probably heard of as the director of such classics as Gurren Lagann and Kill la Kill. And by watching this movie, you can definitely tell. So, Dee, what did you think?
Honestly, it was a lot more, and I went in with high expectations, but it blew those away. Honestly, yeah. Visually, I feel like this is, I think, the most pleasing project they've done so far. The colors were just so. I think some of the really pivotal scenes were just so beautifully animated. The voice acting was perfect. Spot on. It was also nice to see a Kamina. Because it really felt like the main character was watching the
I liked Gallo a lot because he is a hot-blooded hero, but he wasn't stereotypical in that sense. Like he took like a moment to cool down and actually think things through, and I was like, you know, that's not something that someone like Kamina would do. It very much
lack that kind of doomed his character.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Gallo was definitely someone who thought things through a little bit more. But I guess we should mention the plot a little bit. It's a movie where 30 years ago, prior to the events of the movie, basically there was something known as the Great World Blaze, where a section of the human population started spontaneously combusting. And it led to the surface of the earth being scorched. And then, 30 years later, things have kind of like normalized, but then there's still, a subset of people who, do you help me? What were they called? What were they referred to as?
God, I knew until you asked me. Burn.
You're right. The burn.
Burnish.
Burnish. There you go.
There you go.
I was like, I know it's some pun on fire.
Yeah. We actually watched this movie.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, but the Burnish, they're still they're basically ostracized, and anytime they catch fire or whatever, they're hunted down by the government. And Gallo is the main character here. He's part of a fire force that's a firefighting team that goes and puts out those fires. So, Jero, does that sound like anything familiar?
Yeah.
What's funny is that like there was a bit of controversy when the Promare came out that like the mangaka of Fire Force and which is also now currently running anime, was basically like, they stole my idea.
Yeah.
and I was having this conversation with D that, like, on the most basic level, yeah, they're kind of similar, but, like, in terms of literally everything else, they're nothing alike.
I think I can honestly say that I would be willing to say that Primera was inspired by it, but to go as far as to say that it, like, copied it or set out to be that is really, really off the mark.
Yeah. I mean, for one thing, Fire Force is, you know, like, it has very strong religious themes. And you could very easily classify it as like a show, a fantasy action show, whereas Promare is very much a sci-fi mecha, genre type of thing. And that's like something that, you know, Imaishi and his crew were very well known for. I mean, like, come on, if you've seen Gurren Lagann, you know. And it has all those flares in it. So it very much is a hot-blooded action romp. It's got the two main characters, Gallo and Leo, who's a member of the Burnish. But yeah, I really loved how the movie, like, in terms of story, like, it focused on these two characters. It showed both sides, both perspectives. They really, like, neither of them was the bad guy, right? Even though they're initially pitted against each other, and of course the real main villain, you could kind of tell right away who it was going to be. But I loved the way that they kind of revealed it, but at the same time, like, there was still surprises left towards the end of the climax of the film. Do you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh yeah.
I'm trying not to spoil it because, I'm sure people still are gonna see this, but, like, I was definitely not disappointed with the main villain's reveal. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, sometimes people will watch a movie and they're watching it in the wrong way, in my opinion, because they're constantly asking questions as, like, well, why didn't you do this? Or, you know, why didn't that character just do that? Or, you know, like, they could have easily solved the problem, right? And there's moments where, like, the characters actually ask those questions of the main villain. And yeah, he's just, and he always keeps coming up with excuses for why he didn't do this or why he didn't do that. But, like, I think this, that played directly into one of the main themes of the movie was that if you hold back or try to hide your true self, like, your true intentions, all you're going to do is burn yourself. And I thought that was actually really smart, was that, like, you know, this guy says, like, oh, this is the only way we could save humanity, when really he just wanted to burn the planet.
Well, and honestly, it's hard for me to, like, not spoil things, but get to the things that I want to talk about. Yeah. I will say that they really do point out that this villain kind of settled on a right answer without really thinking it through. He took the first solution he could find and was like, that's how this has to be done. And I think a lot of that comes from, there's some internal issues with this villain that I think really relate to the method he chose.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Because, like, you know, he's justifying it, but, like, at the center of it, he's playing into the same, desires of the people who he's condemning. And I thought that was really smart. But what else? The action was great. How'd you feel about the Deus Ex Machina?
I laughed quite a bit. The design was really good, and I love how he was like, I just can't get fired up in this thing. And Leo's like, hold on, let me just pimp your ride real quick. And, like, of course the design was a little bit reminiscent of the Gurren, but, like, in a really good way. And the fight choreography with the mechs was amazing. I think they have a way of making them feel so much more lively than I think most other productions do. They feel, personifies the wrong word, but they move in a much more human way than I think.
I think what really stood out to me about this movie was their use of 3D. because you, I mean, like most of the movie felt like it was 3D models, especially during the action sequences. But what I think was really great about that was that it allowed them to do crazy things with the camera and, you know, give you like crazy spins and zooms. And like, I felt like the, at some points it was a little much, to keep track of, especially with all the colors on screen. But overall the spectacle was really awesome.
Yeah. It really, the action sequences stunning. I know I've said this, but this movie is gorgeous and it's way more so than I expected. The use of color is also really honestly, oh. I really wish I could have gotten this as like a longer series.
Oh yeah, totally. And like, it's, I mean, it's one of those things where I really would have liked to have seen this be a TV show, but the movie ends in a very final way.
Oh yeah.
Which is nice, you know, it's nice to get resolution, but, another thing I really liked was, you know, like the fights are usually like they're hot versus cold, right? Like, you know, the quote unquote good guys use, you know, ice based weaponry, and the burnish use fire, obviously, right? But like, what was really cool about it is that the fire felt like it was solid.
Yeah,
you got that sense?
It was very strange because there were times where there was concussive force behind it, but it wasn't like explosions. It was like physically pushing on things.
Yeah. Or like, you know, like Leo would, like he would create his fire, but then it would solidify into a sword. So yeah, like it was a sword that he was swinging around that was like physical, but it was still made out of fire.
Which was kind of, I couldn't really figure out what was going on with that. And I just decided to enjoy the ride. I was like, I don't know how to. It looks cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, you know how like water phase shifts, right, based on temperature, right? So like you get ice from liquid water. Well, it almost felt like they were doing the same thing for fire, and I just thought that was a really great representation of it. And of course, you know, like we've been harping on the colors, but like just the way that they depicted the fire and the colors they used was all really creative. But yeah, I can't say enough good things about the movie. Like it really was just awesome.
Nice. So I'll have to check that out on Blu-ray.
Yeah. You really should. It's well worth it.
I'm going down the list of other anime movies that are coming out this year. It kind of seems quiet the rest of the way. Are you guys seeing Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl? That movie?
Already got my tickets.
All right.
Oh, John, did you give me one?
Nope.
What? I told you just start buying the tickets and then
I will go see this anime movie by myself if I have to. yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that one. I think there's a One Piece movie coming out.
Yeah, there's One Piece Stampede in mid-October, and then mid-November is the Konosuba movie.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely seeing that. For anyone that's interested in that, it is a follow-up to the second season. It's based off of Volume 5 of the novels. Season 2 adapted up through Volume 4, so it really is just a direct continuation. So if you've been anxious for Season 3 of Konosuba, you need to watch this movie.
Yeah, it's kind of it in a way.
Yeah.
And I like that about Konosuba because while I saw the Danmachi movie and I thought it was good, it was really just another straight-ahead shonen action movie.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It was very much it was meant to be enjoyed by itself, right? Like and you can tell that it was an original story. The author was involved in it, which I think is really great. And yeah. I know we're going a little off topic here, but now I'm started. the Danmachi movie expanded a little bit on the lore of the series. Like it introduced Artemis, which she had been mentioned before as one of the three virgin goddesses. So it was kind of cool just to see her realized. And it My only issue with it is that like the series falls in the nebulous space between season one and season two, mm-hmm. but then like the events of the movie are just never mentioned again.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yep. All right, and if that wraps up our movie discussion, thus concludes episode 290 of the Anavision podcast. Special thanks to Dee. Thank you for joining us for talking about so many of these topics today. Nice to have you on.
Thanks. I enjoyed it, as usual.
Yeah, it had been almost like a couple years, I want to say.
Yeah, I can't remember the last episode I was around for. It was a while. I
remember talking about Persona 5.
I think that was.
Yeah. Have to have you on more frequently. And stick to that instead of just saying it and then 2 years later, we got to have you on more.
Next year we're getting Persona 5R, so I will be present for that conversation.
Yeah. I love the new opening for that. Do you guys see that?
Yes.
Pretty cool.
And if Jero plays it, I already know he's going down the Kasumi route.
Yeah. Going down the new girl routes for sure.
I can't even, like, I'm saying it because she's got red hair and you've got that weakness, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to lie. I do too. And also, I just like everything about her just screams like the heroine that I would choose. So,
right.
Yeah, she's definitely.
I kind of had you pegged for a Queen fan, to be honest.
Who, Jero?
No, you.
Me? No. That's you're thinking of.
I'm sorry, I forget. You have basic taste. That was...
Okay, I'm sorry. On is not basic. All right. On is a lovely lady.
Oh God! After the model, how shocking.
To be perfectly honest, though, like I wanted to go the Kawakami route.
I mean, yeah.
but it just felt so wrong. But that's the best part.
Well, that's why I went like, I'm forgetting the doctor.
I was trying to remember her name too.
Tai Takemi.
Tai Takemi. Yeah, I loved her route.
Yeah,
and just the idea of like, you know, if you're a high school kid, you know, you see hot, you know, I don't know how much further I want to go down, but you know,
a hot goth doctor, and you're like,
yeah,
you know, she's an older lady. She's gonna She's going to literally play doctor with you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they definitely go in some mind-blowing directions. Like, I can't imagine being a high school kid and having my teacher show up to my room at, like, mm-hmm. 9 o'clock in a maid outfit.
Yeah. But and giving you a massage so that you can go out late at night.
Yeah, but to be honest, like, with Persona 5, like, that game I had the hardest time choosing. Because my first playthrough, I really didn't decide until like the very end, because mm-hmm. I was like, I really was kind of stuck between all four of the main girls.
Yeah.
And but like, ironically, now that Kasumi's a thing, I'm over here like, yeah, she's automatically best girl.
Yeah.
I was stuck between Takemi, Oya, the reporter, and mm-hmm. And of course your teacher, which I'm sure you guys have noticed. Trend with all three of those characters.
Mm-hmm.
They are all adults.
I've got a weakness for the older ones.
Uh-huh. Not even though they're all younger than you, like in real life.
Like 40 something. I don't think all of Oya is young. She had a hard life of booze and cigarettes.
That's just the funniest thing to think about, because on next week's show, we're going to talk about the summer 2019 season, either next week or the week after next, but how we relate more with the mom character than the kid.
Like how with Do You Love Your Mom and her two-hit multi-target attacks, I'm over here like, she's not my mom.
Oh, man. All right, so next time you hear from us, we will be talking about wrapping up the summer 2019 anime season, and then the next time after that, we will be talking about the fall 2019 anime season. Kind of taking a quick look for the shows, we got Azur Lane, which I've never played a gacha for that, Psycho Pass Free, Grand Blue, another gacha is dominating anime, Phantasy Star Online 2, Trying to pick out anything that's really big on this. Final season of Shokugeki no Soma.
SAO, Alicization's coming back.
Oh, yeah.
Also, isn't Fate Grand Order getting another anime, or is that
some other season? Yeah, it's getting the Babylonia story. Speaking of gacha games. Here's a big one, Chihaya Fubu Season 3.
Wait, are you serious? Is that actually happening?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
I don't know if I'm ready to have my heart broken by that show. Because I am definitely Team Tai Chi, and yeah, I feel like that's not where it's going.
Your chances are not looking good.
I know.
Well, you know, John, you tend to back the wrong horse anyway. So,
D, you remember the world Godly knows, right? Justin
or yeah, Jero? Yeah. I do. I remember the I guess we'll go ahead and spoil. I believe Chihiro was the winner.
Yes.
A weird way to say best girl, but yeah.
I'm forever salty about that.
Yeah, I do. I agree with D. I did think she was best girl.
See?
I remember. I'm surrounded by people with terrible taste.
John, you have the most basic taste.
There was so many better options.
I mean, clearly not. Best girl won, John.
Yeah. That was a topic you recommended that we will have to do next time.
Yeah.
The best girl.
I did. Yeah, to give the audience a preview, we will eventually be doing best girls that actually won. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is a saying, right? Like best girl never wins.
That's one where we gotta be in person, because that one we gotta really bring the heat on that.
Oh yeah, that one's gonna be heavily subjective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I need you guys to call me up for that one, and I also probably be like two drinks in by the time I get there.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
What do you mean, Chitoga is a shit to your wife?
I'm glad you know where this is going, John.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know which team I'm backing there.
Mm. I'm with you. On Adair's mom. But yeah, I don't even want to talk about Nisekoi because you knew where it was going, and it never it like gave you hope that it was gonna swerve, and it never did.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's save some for the actual show I'm about to get really angry right now.
I'll close out the show to have you simmer down. Next time you hear from us, we'll be talking about anime for the next couple episodes. So check us out at animevision.org, where you can check out all of our episodes there, and check out our EXTs and stuff that I would like to do more of in some way, shape, or form eventually. And also subscribe on iTunes and all of that. A review would be nice if you want to leave it for us. So for Amuro and D, I'm Jero. We will see you next time on the Animevision Podcast. Believe it.